This is Radio Superior 1944, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1944. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now into the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the Lake Station, KUWS. Jack McKenna reminding you, hasten the homecoming by Victory Bonds. It's 6 o'clock, Standard Wartime, Wednesday, June 7th, 1944. Lou Martin is standing by with the latest news from the D-Day Plus One invasion. Rapid Ray Paulson is in with the sports, and we've got the best doggone music from the 1944 Hit Parade, plus a couple of oldies for you, too. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Stack's Department Store. Stacks has gifts for the June bride, including soft, alluring gowns for just $3.50. Alluring, eh, Lou?
I'm trying to do a newscast, if you don't mind. Good evening, one and all. The Allies have repulsed the counterattacks by Nazi troops near Caen. We begin our World Shortwave Radio report from the Supreme Headquarters of the Allied Expeditionary Force in London.
London calling, your correspondent, Webb Miller here. Headquarters has just announced that the Allies have beaten back German attacks in the Caen region of France. All beaches along the Normandy coast have been cleared of enemy forces, although some are presumably still under fire from Nazi rear guard artillery. Other beaches have been linked and heavy fighting is reported inland. One HQ officer called early Wednesday morning reports disappointing, but by midday showed a decided improvement. Meanwhile, a great battle is flaring between airborne troops in the Cherbourg Peninsula. Both Allied and German air forces have dropped fighting men in a wide area on the second day of the invasion. The Germans said they beat off landings near Calais, 150 miles northeast of Cherbourg, but Supreme Allied Headquarters say there was no effort to land in Calais. The German command now admits superior forces have taken the beach areas. German DNB news services say American troops are being reinforced and are fighting Nazi troops near San Mariglis on the tip of the Cherbourg Peninsula. The DNB also reports that Allied forces are as much as 6 miles inland, but British forces attempting to take Caen 9 miles inland have been pushed back. Caen remains in German hands. At this point of the invasion, Supreme Allied Headquarters is telling us little. In fact, General Eisenhower believes any information on the location of troops and successes or failures would aid the enemy's efforts. In London, this is Webb Miller calling the Isle of Wight from in Dover Straits.
This is the Isle of Wight. Lewis Lochner, your correspondent. From our listening post, it is clear from Berlin Radio that this invasion is spreading confusion among the Germans. Thousands of paratroopers dropped behind enemy lines hours before yesterday's landings on the Normandy beachheads. Along with that, German DNB radio says sacks of wheat with explosives attached were dropped to decoy Nazi troops. The explosives went off as soon as the parachuting dummy landed. That led the enemy to believe they were under fire. Allied headquarters disclosed today that 500 C-47 troop carrier planes were used in the invasion, forming a train 9 planes wide and 200 miles long. This was not without loss. 12 C-47 troop carrier planes were missing, and a dozen gliders are also unaccounted for. Even so, Allied HQ describes the tricky airborne assault as a success. Even as all of these air sorties continue, for some reason there's no sign that Reich Marshal Hermann Goering is using the Luftwaffe against our boys. Only a handful of Junker 88s buzzed our pilots, and those didn't fight, not really. Returning Mitchell bomber pilots here report a great ring of fire around Lisieux, south of Le Havre, and a sinister glow over Caen, where Prime Minister Churchill reports fighting in the streets. Caen is critical. It is 9 miles inland on the rail line connecting Le Havre and Paris. If the Tommies take Caen, they'll cut off supplies to Nazis in Le Havre and the coast. The weather, a source of anxiety for Allied officers, is improving bit by bit, but landing is still rather hairy. I could say that Canadian fighter pilots back from their sorties today say things are going generally well. In fact, some towns, and I won't be saying their names, already have American flags flying over them. At the Isle of Wight, this is Lewis Lochner, calling France. Come in, Normandy.
Hello, this is Max Jordan reporting from an undisclosed beachhead in northern France. We're ashore, and we've established a camp for supplies and troops to reinforce our mission. It can be said now that this landing yesterday was difficult. Many of the first assault troops storming the beaches were mowed down by Nazi crossfire. Succeeding troops climbed over their bodies until a foothold was established. The fighting was hotter than hell yesterday. I was at Anzio, but Anzio was nothing like this. Germans laid down intensive fire from well-placed guns overlooking the beaches. Men crouched behind jeeps, tanks, and anything they could find for cover. Tall cliffs were scaled by the American Rangers. It took them just 15 minutes to capture gun positions once they began climbing the walls. I've been told some beaches had light casualties, others heavy. German machine gunners waited until landing craft lowered their ramps before spraying it with bullets. The struggle lasted for hours, well into the afternoon, but the German offenses crumbled under the weight of the Allied onslaught. The whole thing was incredible. Overhead, P-38s and P-47s crisscrossed constantly, blasting the German defenses. A pall of smoke hung over the beach. Bodies floated in the water, and burning barges lay swamped in the choppy Channel Sea. I'll never forget the journey to the beach. The GIs were calm. Private Charles Blackledge of Columbia, Mississippi, was sitting on TNT, bazookas, mortars, and other weapons, quietly reading a little black-covered Bible. Another boy slept on top of a Jeep just 5 minutes before landing. Two Negro Jeep drivers were standing at the craft's rail, watching the approaching continent. One simply said, "There she is." As they landed, one private turned to me to say, "If you see Ike, tell him we're the boys who can do it." With the troops at the front, this is Max Jordan calling England. Come in, Dover.
This is an invasion port in England. Stan Turner, your correspondent. It can now be disclosed that thousands upon thousands of GIs were told exactly where they were going and what they would do on D-Day. Then they were placed under a quarantine so rigid their food was prepared for them in an outside area and passed to them through barbed wire fencing. Guards inside and out were under orders to shoot to kill anyone attempting to leave the area. This secrecy was one of the greatest feats of the war. For the first time in history, every man, from the generals down to the last private, was thoroughly instructed in the operations expected of them. These troops knew the secrets of the invasion a week before it happened, yet they kept it so well that townspeople who walked within a few feet of them had no idea of their destination. The man in charge of the Office of Counterintelligence at this port, Lieutenant Tom Ryan of Appleton, Wisconsin, says once the men moved into this camp and were given their instructions, they might as well have been on Mars. Any member of the invasion force who became sick was cared for by doctors and nurses who were also quarantined. As troops boarded invasion ships, it became apparent how completely the instructions were being obeyed. Despite the presence of hundreds of women on shore, not one GI so much as whistled or yoo-hooed. At an invasion port in England, this is Stan Turner. Calling America, come in, DeWitt McKenzie.
This is Washington. Analyst DeWitt McKenzie reporting for Associated Press. Hitler's powerful Atlantic Wall, behind which he has strutted and threatened, has been broken at one of its strongest points. The landings, which were begun on the Cherbourg Peninsula of Normandy on Tuesday, stormy dawn, are continuing today. Commander-in-Chief Eisenhower says, "Satisfactory progress has been made. What we must remember is that this is only the beginning. We don't know that this is intended to be the main invasion point, or that the main thrust will come somewhere else. Because of that, Hitler isn't moving his inland reserves. He doesn't want to commit those troops until he's sure this is the main assault." One would expect the Allies to pursue just such a strategy. This attack on Normandy may only be a feint. Whatever the case, Hitler remains off balance as the Allies strengthen their foothold on Fortress Europe. In Washington, This is DeWitt McKenzie calling Italy. Come in, Naples.
This is Allied headquarters in Naples, Italy. Wes Gallagher reporting. Just 2 days after the capture of Rome, the American Fifth Army is in pursuit of the retreating Germans 40 miles north of Rome. German communique reports that Allied troops have achieved a major breakthrough in German lines and have launched an attack. The Fifth Army infantry is chasing General Kesselring's fleeing army. Another column is pushing to the northwest, crossing the Tiber River and forging behind the Nazi rear guard. Only spotty resistance is encountered by the Fifth Army, but the Eighth Army is in stiff combat with Nazi forces in the mountainous areas east of Rome. In Naples, this is Wes Gallagher reporting.
American planes continued their methodical blasting of isolated Japanese bases in the Central Pacific, striking Jap bases in the Marshall Islands and Truk. Nauru, west of the American-held Gilbert Islands, was also bombed. Supreme Headquarters of the Allied Expeditionary Force announced that General Omar Bradley is commanding the U.S. ground forces of the D-Day invasion. The 51-year-old Bradley gained fame in Tunisia in May of 1943 when he led the capture of the French naval base of Bizerte. General Bradley has a reputation for being thrifty with his troops' blood and is a master of tactics. He's also known as the Doughboy's General. Polish Prime Minister in exile Stanislaw Mikołajczyk met with American officials today to try to ease tensions with Russia. Acting Secretary of State Edward Stettinius will have the first meeting, followed by a session with President Roosevelt. Assembly line work was halted at the Lackland, Ohio Plane Manufacturing Company. 450 workers walked off the job yesterday after seven Negroes were transferred to the previously all-white cylinder department. Today, 15,000 workers at the Wright Aeronautical Plant didn't show up for work. The CIO union says the strike is unauthorized. One Army official is pleading for workers to back the invasion and get back to work. The War Department wants to build 69 new national cemeteries. The House Military Committee wants to establish a soldier cemetery in every state. And in this region, the proposal would locate cemeteries in Wausau, Madison, Chicago, Des Moines, and Springfield, Ohio. But what's the most gripping about the report is that as of last November, 20,000 Americans have been killed since the attack on Pearl Harbor. But the War Department estimates that 100,000 will die before the war is over. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:07 Central Wartime. Jack McKenna has these words from our sponsor.
That music's being heard all over the place, folks, these days. In June, gifts for the June bride from Stack's soft, alluring gowns, just $3.50 to $5.98. Charming to the tips of her fingers are the gloves at Stacks. For just $4.95, she'll be pleased with these white doe-skin gloves, 6-button length and washable. New Connie white shoes. Oh, they're beautiful, beautiful. $5.50 for a pair of these for the bride to wear. Utterly charming for the June bride. Ah, yes, indeed. That's at Stacks in Superior right now.
Wisconsin's three major parties are gearing up for an August 15th primary. Republican Governor Walter Goodland will run for another term, but he'll be opposed by four other Republicans. Four progressive candidates have filed and three Democrats, including former Milwaukee Mayor Daniel Hone. They're all in the race. Running in northern Wisconsin's 10th congressional district are incumbent Republican Alvin Okonski of Mercer, who's challenged by Harry Simon of Ashland. Only one Democrat's in the race, Washburn attorney Elizabeth Hawks. Harry Van Gilder of Ashland is running as a progressive. In the race for U.S. Senate, incumbent Republican Alexander Wiley of Chippewa Falls will have primary competition. Perry Stern of Milwaukee, Latham Smith of Sturgeon Bay, and Captain Joseph McCarthy of Appleton. Invasion Day brought a spurt of bond buying around the region. Douglas County War Finance Committee Chairman Clyde Thomas says that all banks and post offices report a surge of purchasing. 2 years ago, launching a ship in Superior was front page news. Now it's becoming routine. At noon today, the USS Habersham was launched at the Walter Butler Shipyards. The Reverend A.W. Arthur of the Pilgrim Lutheran Church in Superior gave the blessing, and Guadalcanal veteran Petty Officer First Class James Buchan was the speaker. And finally, Jack, Superior cabarets will have to close at 1 a.m., same time as the taverns. An ordinance was passed last night at the city council meeting. Cabarets had been allowed to stay open till 3 a.m., but couldn't serve liquor. City Attorney Flynn says enforcing that law was almost impossible.
So, you'll be getting to bed a couple of hours earlier now, eh, Lou? Well, thanks, Lou Martin, the soon-to-be most rested newsman in town. Let's check that forecast for this June 7th, 1944. Warmer with an occasional shower tomorrow. Tonight's low will be about 50 degrees, with a high tomorrow zooming up to 72. Now let's get to our 1944 hit parade. This one's new from Johnny Mercer with the Pied Pipers and Joe Stafford. Here's Candy on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Candy, I call my sugar candy,
because I'm sweet on candy, and candy's sweet on me. And candy's always handy
when I need sympathy.
I wish that there were four of her, so I could love much more of her.
She has taken my complete heart,
got a sweet tooth for my sweetheart Candy.
It's gonna be just dandy
the day I take my Candy and make her mine, all mine.
Johnny Mercer, who else? For the Pied Pipers and Joe Stafford and Candy on station KUWS. And Johnny wrote that tune, too. Who else could write it and sing it like that? What you got, Lou?
One of the oddities of London these days is that you'll see life preservers hanging on hooks. They're at hundreds of special reservoirs around London, which are holding water to make sure the city never runs out when it's being bombed. People hung up life belts after children drowned in the reservoirs while sailing toy boats. Well, here's one from our It's a Small World file. Superior Attorney Roger Cheever had a merry chase in merry old England recently. Now in the service of Uncle Sam, Mr. Cheever was riding a Jeep, passing another Jeep going the other way, and he thought something was terribly familiar. So he swung his Jeep around and followed him for 3 miles. Sure enough, it was the former chairman of the Douglas County Board, James Lavelle.
Well, what do you know? But, Lou, that first story is sad.
Well, war is sad. But the second story is happy.
Gotta have those once in a while, too. Hey, Rapid Ray is coming with the sports right after this swell number from 1941. Glenn Miller and his orchestra and Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me.
Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Don't go walking down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me till I come marching home.
I just got word from a guy who heard from the guy next door to me. The girl he met just loves to pet, and it fits you to a T. So
don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me till I come marching home.
Don't give up with those lips of yours to anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Watch the girls on the foreign shores. You'll have to report to me when you come marching home. Don't hold anyone on your knee. You better be true to me. You better be true to me. You better be true to me. Don't hold anyone on your knee. You're getting a third degree when you come marching home. You're on your own where there is no phone, and I can't keep tab on you. Be fair to me, I'll guarantee this is one thing that I'll do. I won't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but you till you come marching
Glenn Miller and his orchestra, and Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree on station KUWS.
Let me introduce George G. Newton of the George G. Newton Realty. You're looking good, George.
Well, I feel great, but that's beside the point. I am a little indignant, Jack and Lou, a little concerned.
The price of real estate is falling.
The building inspector is bugging you again?
They're forming a tenants' union?
They're rationing interest rates.
No, 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 that's not it. And very funny, guys. You never give old George G. a break, do you? Well, the fact is, we don't have any trouble finding renters these days. No siree, Bob.
I'm Jack, and he's Lou.
Never mind. The fact is, we have a severe housing crunch. I've never seen anything like it. Heck, the shipyards are asking people to rent out their spare room in their own private home.
I think our engineer, Joe, is trying to do that.
Well, good for him. That's very patriotic.
The problem is, He lives in a one-room apartment.
Ah, that explains him sleeping on the radio station couch in the lounge.
And his toothbrush in the men's room.
Right next to his socks, drying on the towel rack.
So back to the original reason for your arrival, George. What's bothering you?
Well, I know that prices are going up, but there's a guy who wants an outrageous price for his home. I mean, it is outrageous. Oh, sure, it's a beaut of a bungalow at the 14th near Weeks Avenue. A very attractive bungalow.
A juicing bungalow?
Yeah.
I think he tricked us into asking him to give an ad.
Shrewd.
It's got a large lot, a big lawn, two-car garage. It's got a full basement with a fireplace, a clothes chute, laundry tubs, a fruit room. On the first floor, they got five roomy rooms, a sun porch and a den. Second floor, a large attic, a finished room. So sure, it's a special place, but you wouldn't believe what they're asking for it.
So what else is going on?
Pretty nice June weather these days.
Well, I'll tell you anyway. This fella wants $6,500 for this home. $6,500. Sheesh!
Awful.
Horrible.
Of course, you could think of the commission. You know, might not be so bad. Well, remember to look me up, folks. I'm George G. Newton with the George G. Newton Realty Company. I'm in the Telegram Building on Tower Avenue. Bye-bye, guys.
Thanks, George G. Now, on with the music, friends. Here's a favorite of mine, and I bet yours too, from the late, great Bix Beiderbecke from 1927. This is At the Jazzland Ball on the Martin and McKenna Show. Bix Beiderbecke, who unfortunately left us in 1931, with At the Jazzland Ball on station KUWS. Hey, hiya, Ray.
Well, hiya, Jake. Man, I'll tell you, old Bix could blow that cornet. But hey, I got one for you. Now that the invasion is on,
It'll be a dark day for Hitler and Tojo when the lights go on again all over the world.
I got another one. The GIs didn't fiddle around, and Rome did not burn.
Well, that's not too bad.
Now, folks, here's Rapid Ray Paulson with the sporting news.
Well, all of the sports world is talking about D-Day, fans. Coast Guard Commander Jack Dempsey sums it up this way. The toughest body of men is tackling perhaps the toughest situation the world has ever known. The former heavyweight champ says he's seen the Germans in prisoner camps, and they're tough. He says they've been training for this for more than 10 years. These days, Dempsey and 25 assistants are training recruits at Manhattan Beach in boxing, judo, wrestling, and stamina. Joe DiMaggio was seen recently, not in center field for the Yankees, but the Army Air Force sergeant was sewing a patch on his uniform. Jolton Joe is at an undisclosed location in the Central Pacific. Boston Red Sox second baseman Bobby Doerr was turned down for Army service. Doerr has a punctured eardrum. Well, sporting fans, the majors return to action today after 2 days' rest period. Yesterday's games were canceled because of the D-Day invasion. So far this season, the St. Louis Cardinals and Browns are in first place in the National and the American Leagues. But Frankie Frisch's Pirates are hot on the Cards' tail. And the Yanks and Tigers are fighting to pass the Browns. One more thing, fans. If you don't think playing the sporting game is important, here's a point from our boys in Italy. We're told that when there's a lull in fighting there, Corporal Vince Murphy, with the 15th Air Force in Italy, recently wrote sports columnist Hugh Fullerton. Corporal Murphy says, "They got the baseball scores every night by shortwave radio." He bunks with a Red Sox fan, a White Sox fan, and a Yankee fan. Well, imagine the conversations they have, Jake. This is Rapid Ray Paulson reminding you that everyone loves a good sport.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you, buddy. Let's all enjoy this oldie but goodie now from 1931. Paul Whiteman and his orchestra, and another favorite, Paper Moon, on the Martin and McKenna Show. The Paul Whiteman Orchestra and Paper Moon on station KUWS. Lou Martin is in now with some bulletins.
This flash just in from New York. The anti-Nazi underground radio station monitored by NBC Radio reports that the Germans have given up the town of Bayeux, 6 miles inland on the Cherbourg Peninsula, after a night battle with Allied forces. From Washington, the Senate House Conference Committee agreed to a compromise over the court-martial hearing of former Rear Admiral Husband Kimmel and Major General Walter Short over the Pearl Harbor catastrophe. They were given a 6-month extension, ironically, until December the 7th for a hearing.
Stay tuned now for Fulton Lewis with the news, followed by Jack Armstrong, All-American Boy, Superman, and the Lone Ranger. Who do you think is strongest, Lou?
I assume you're talking about those fictional characters and your childlike imagination.
It's got to be Superman. I mean, that guy can do it all.
It's time to go.
Oh, indeed it is. It is. We'll be back same time, folks, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and we don't make the Lone Ranger mad. For Lou Martin, then, this is Jack McKenna reminding you that war bonds mean freedom.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1944, an original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Paul Guggenheimer plays foreign correspondent Daryl Berrigan. Other performances by Duke Skorich, Al Katz, John Munsell, Don Mason. All events reported on Radio Superior 1944 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week at this time for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Tony Jasmine, speaking. Good night.